From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
And now I am here with Jason Hansen. He is the president and CEO of Sierra Pacific Home and Comfort. And today I'm excited to talk to Jason. He's a Marine, like my son Marcus, which gives me like automatic respect. But then I heard about the business that he had built over at Sierra Pacific and how he built it. And I'm like, this guy is a stud. And so anyway, now you get to meet him out there in Sacramento, entrepreneur land. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so let's talk about how you broke into the business because it was not what I think a lot of people would look at as the customary route. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I don't know that I broke in. I probably I stumbled into it.
Okay.
I had decided to make a career change. I got out of the Marine Corps after a good while in the Marine Corps and was looking for an opportunity to have a career around where I could be home with a family. And I happened to get into the HVAC industry just because the company that I interviewed with was a dynamic company, had great leadership, and I felt like that was the kind of entity I wanted to be a part of. I was used to being with elite people in the Marine Corps. So I ended up in the HVAC business on the contracting side, general manager training program to run a home services center, basically a shop, a local shop. And that's really how I got into it, not by design. I just chose the company and the people I wanted to work for, and they happened to be in the HVAC industry.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I was referring to, or what was on my mind, is that you were a sales rep, and then now you're a CEO. You were a sales. You were a manufacturer. You work for the manufacturing side, and then now you borrowed some money and bought a business.
Yeah, so fast forward through that time where I was working for a contractor. Then I went to the manufacturing side, and I was calling on other contractors and business owners, and I had the opportunity to see a lot of different types of businesses. And this business in particular was a customer of mine, and the owner, the former owner and the founder of the company, became more than just a client of mine, a customer of mine. He became like a coach and a mentor. And the relationship developed in a way where he was ready to retire, and he came to me and just said, I'm just too long in the tooth to keep doing this, and the team's ready to go to another level. I want to see someone who can lead them and keep them together, and I think you're the kind of person that can do it. And so that began the entrance into the business in which I took an SBA loan, basically mortgaged everything I had and a bunch that I didn't. And put together an acquisition agreement. And in March of 2007, I took over the company.
What do you think about that timing?
Right? It's all blue sky in March of 2007. Everything was looking great. Economy's just crushing it. And of course, we all know history that it didn't take but a year and a half for things to become pretty evident. And then by the end of 2008, things were in dire straits. I was fortunate. I had been part of a company at that point for more than a year and a half plus. The management team had got familiar with me. It was a well-built, well-run company when I got to it. So we just made smart, difficult decisions and came out of it stronger than we went into it.
That's interesting. So it was already well run. That's interesting. And the owner, you became friends. It seems like selling a company to a manufacturer's rep is uncommon, especially a company that's run that well. Obviously, you had good employees, and then almost like an outsider coming in. So then you hit the financial crisis, and it sounds like your company, the companies I was involved with, I mean, it was a major shakeup at that point. Shakeup meaning we had to regroup and manage our expenses a lot more tightly, which is never fun. What any learning through that? You said you became a better company. Any learning through that process?
Yes, definitely. It was a lesson there in making decisions quickly, even if they're not perfect decisions. That was important that we moved quickly to do in the right direction. So even if there were adjustments that needed to be made, we had to move quickly and decisively through.
Was revenue in my company, revenue came to a screeching halt. Is that same with us?
So our, let's go back to that time. We were a residential service retrofit company. At that time, we were heavily solar weighted. So the company was founded as a solar company, solar pool heating, solar water heating. It developed solar electricity in the early 2000s when grid-tied solar really became a good market to be in. So we were pretty heavily solar at that time, and we had virtually everybody for a couple month period say, "I'm not doing anything. I'm not canceling my project, but I'm not ready to move forward until I see what goes on." And so, yeah, there was a significant shortfall in revenue in that time. So yes, we were going through that same process of figuring out, okay, how do we keep this thing together? And at what size do we need to be when we, to be sustainable?
Yeah, it's interesting because the people that are listening now, for a lot of people, this seems like so long ago. It's almost, you almost don't even think about it anymore. But for people that were in a CEO type position at the time, if it's possible to have PTSD over something that happens in business, I mean, that was a moment where some of the decisions that I ended up making, they were extremely painful, gut-wrenching type decisions. And, I'm still not sure I made them right. But when you said you had to make them fast, that's interesting because that's how I felt too. Our team felt. It wasn't just me. So, yeah, making quick decisions, even though it might not have been perfect.
Yes, definitely. I agree with you. I tell people often that I feel like a depression era business owner because the way I think from that period of time is indelibly marked on me right now. I still think in terms of the things that we had to go through and what would we do again now if we had to face the same thing.
Interesting. You know, when COVID hit, I had that's when I had my PTSD flashbacks. I'm using any military people out there, people who maybe have PTS, I apologize. This hit me hard as somebody who had hundreds of employees and, had to reduce headcount and change salaries and so on. When COVID hit, I had a flashback that it was going to be very similar because I'm in the type of business that we do events and things like that. And those all got shut off. And some of our revenue got hit, but we immediately bounced back. But for a month or two there, it was not good. My teammates, I guess Scott over here does everything for us. He will tell you I shut down a little bit in terms of, let me back up. I started making quick decisions like it was 2008, and that probably didn't need to be as quickly made at that moment. I could have hit pause, and I didn't.
Yeah, I did initially as well because, we go from being inside homes all the time suddenly, wait, is anybody going to even let us into their house? How's this going to work? For the first 3 weeks, I would say, I can remember clearly the mid-March to the first week of April timeframe was the toughest for us. And we were initially making moves to cut expenses and figure out how we're going to get through it. Fortunately, it turned different for us this time in that we quickly pulled up momentum because we suddenly found ourselves in certain segments of our business were in super high demand because of COVID.
People wanted to put money in their house.
They did. So we go into spring. So we're a solar pool heating business. So we have all these different specialty departments within our company. And the solar pool heating division is one of them. A unique business. So there's not many companies that do it. And so we have a big clientele for that. And that was an example of counterintuitive. We suddenly were getting phone calls from the parents that were trying to work from home and had kids at home saying, I got to get these kids out of the house. I got to get them into the swimming pool. I cannot take them anymore in this house. We have to have solar on our house. And it became, the demand was at a different level than we even expected. And same thing with air conditioning. As you go into the summer and people are suddenly at home all day when they normally were at an office, and they suddenly discover, wow, this house actually isn't very comfortable. This is, I don't really like this, the comfort level of this house. So our air conditioning business exploded. It was
crazy. So you guys are HVAC, your air conditioning, like maintenance. You do maintenance contracts, things like that.
Yep.
And then you have solar. Is that the company, or is it broader than that?
Yeah. So to expand on that, solar pool heating is one technology, very different kind of technology. We do a lot of pool equipment, pool controls, but then you have solar electricity, which is more, commonly known today, and energy storage that ties with that. So batteries, we do home standby generators because we're finding that, now Northern California is, there's quite a bit of demand to ensure that people have uninterrupted life. So we got the generator business, HVAC, windows and doors, insulation, water treatment, water heaters. So that's the core. We have, there's some ancillary.
Pretty broad though, because you get the windows and doors mixed in there. Feels like was that there when you got there?
They had done it in the past. Okay. By the time I had acquired the company, they were not actively involved in the windows anymore, and I brought it back on. We are a home comfort, home energy business. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to. So we're looking at the things that make people, we want to make their life better. And we know that the home is where their largest investment is. We know that that's where their loved ones are, and their most expensive possessions are probably there. That's where they go for sanctuary. And so we're about making people's lives better by our expertise to make that home sustainable.
Yeah, and it's more efficient, I assume, right? A lot of solar and things like that. And you reduce your monthly burn rate at home if you've got the right assets on your house.
Exactly. So yeah. The awesome thing about our products and in including the home comfort and improved lifestyle, health and whatnot, is they often save money. So that's a great thing too. So they, there's an investment there that people can look at and go, this is great. I'm improving my life and I'm saving money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so you got COVID it's a different kind of crisis, but these crises, they sort of test the team in my mind. Cause even though, I made some, maybe rash decisions or some difficult decisions throughout these two crises, I think that my team ended up strengthening overall afterwards in both scenarios. Did you see that in yours as well? And what do you think attributed to maybe any improvement in team chemistry and so on?
Yeah, we definitely see that. So the necessity for adaptation is there. And so the people that were involved with it, they're creative, they're problem solvers, they want to be successful. So it was a matter of just organizing them and coaching them through. We were facing new challenges that we didn't have a playbook for, but we were taking the playbook for similar activities and just saying, well, let's see if this works. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But as a result of that, the communication, the internal communication with the team, there were some friction points, but getting through them made us stronger. It organized us better, developed bonds in a way that made us stronger than when things were going smooth. And, we were growing and doing well as a company with, the normal environment that we had experienced. The economy was good. There was things for us. The economy was good. Things were going well for us. And then this challenge put us into a format where, we had to think harder about what we need to get better at. The strengths of the business were there, but the weaknesses of the business weren't exposed until COVID came around. And that was that's probably one of the blessings of COVID for us.
Hmm. Okay. So you guys have, in the economy out there, there's, less great employees to hire than there once were, right? Finding good teammates is more and more difficult. Are you running into that challenge? And if so, I mean, you have to be. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with retention and recruitment and so on?
Yes. So, you know, we're a trades business. So the ultimately the people that execute the work that make it happen at the house, they're tradesmen, they're professional craftsmen. I call them tradesmen and professional craftsmen. I tell them all the time, if you want a construction job, go out and find one out there. There's 1,000 companies that'll hire you today. But if you're going to be at Sierra Pacific, you wake up every day and you believe in yourself as a tradesman and a craftsman. That's mm-hmm. different than just being in construction. You owe it to the people that we go and serve that you put the best into your workmanship, because their house, after you leave, you're going to touch roof penetrations and gas connections and water connections and electrical connections. All these things need to be permanent, durable improvements to the home. So think of yourself as a tradesman and a craftsman. And so we give them that respect. We don't treat them with a downtrodden mentality on construction. I love the trades. I love tradespeople. You have to be smart to be in the trades. Mm-hmm. It's not for dummies. And so there's a common misconception or maybe a stereotype out there that tradespeople, they got there because they weren't smart enough to go to college or something like that. We don't believe it that way. I don't see it that way. These people that I get the privilege to work with, they are smart people. They just weren't ready or interested in academics at another level. But I would put them against a lot of academics. Mm-hmm. And so we treat them. So that's the starting point for me is like, let's believe in who we are. Let's believe what our purpose is. We have a purpose to go and be great for someone who's counting on us. So that's the starting point for how we recruit and how we retain, is just understand this is our purpose. This is what we're going to do. From there, it is a challenge because there is a misconception again that why would you go do that kind of a job? Because it's laborious work at times, they come home in a hot and sweaty or cold and damp from the environment that they're working in. But there's a lot of reward in going and giving a great construction project that results in great craftsmanship. Mm-hmm. And so we work hard on that. Like we work hard on workmanship. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. So thinking about this, you had mentioned something about three rings. I don't remember what that reference was. I just made a note of that. What's three rings mean to you?
Yeah. So somewhere acquired through the industry, I've heard it. First thing you got to do is you got to get the phone to ring.
Okay.
Then you got to get the doorbell to ring, and then you got to get the cash register to ring. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is how do you get people to call you and give you a shot?
Yeah.
You got to do well at communicating what you're going to do, so that when you get to the door, we're at people's homes. Our place of business is in their home. So you got to win that.
Okay, so you got to get the phone to ring. I love that, because you got to get the cash register to ring. I was in a business, we called our phones the cash register. Oh, the cash register is going off.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so phone to ring.
Doorbell to ring.
The doorbell to ring. And so that means we're out there at the house ringing the doorbell. Is that what that is?
Yeah, and really what that refers to is when somebody calls in, there is a segment of the population that thinks that you can shop for these kind of home improvements over the phone. Like, I'm just going to call around and get prices. And so it's important that as a company that delivers more than just a quick installation at a cheap price, that we deliver value in a permanent home improvement that's durable with people that you're going to like and trust in your home. Mm-hmm. We have to explain what we're going to do and why we're going to do it and why we can't give them a price over the phone. So that concept is about helping the consumer, our client, the buyer, go through the right mentality about how to shop for a major home improvement. There's a lot of people that are in the construction contracting business, but you don't get the same kind of results. Just like you can't. So some people think they're buying an appliance. So if you go and you wanted to buy a particular refrigerator and you know that that refrigerator is at several different appliance stores, you might go and say, well, which one has the lowest price? But these are not you know, we assemble and construct our components on the house at the site. And so it takes craftsmanship to do that. So we have to explain that to people. And that's the idea of getting the doorbell to ring. It's like, we're going to do more than just drop off a bid here.
Interesting, guys. I'm going to steal this concept, this three rings, because I own a concrete company. And, so very similar. Hey, you know, people call up, how much is the price of concrete? What's it cost a yard, you know, installed? And look, every job is different, right? It's hard for somebody answering the phone to price it out. We need to get out there and see what we're dealing with. And you know, the customer ultimately needs that anyway. But they don't know that. So, you know, a lot of people are tempted to just go, oh, you know, it's 10 bucks a foot. You know, how much per square foot? It's 10 bucks a foot or whatever. Well, let me see what you've got here. And, you know, I'm stealing that for my concrete company.
Well, I stole it from somebody else. So steal shamelessly. It's perfectly good. You hit it right on the head, though, is that we have to help them understand there is a smart way to buy this. We may not be the right choice for you. We're going to do everything in our power to help them understand that we are and that we're good. You know, we're going to do what they want. But at the end, when we're done, even if they don't choose us, what I intend for us to do is have made their decision better, because they learn from us. They learn how to buy at least the right thing. I have to apologize for our industry at times, because I see other people who were burned by contractors who are now going out and they're buying something that they should have only had to buy once. Now they're buying it twice because the installation they got wasn't right. And now it broke down in two or three or five or, you know, some premature time over what it should have lasted. And I hate seeing that. That's just, you know, that's just malpractice by contractors. So we work hard at preventing that. Even if we don't win the business, they should know how to pick the right contractor.
Well, in the concrete world, it probably has some similarities. There's people out there that are unlicensed, uninsured, you know, really, you probably don't want them doing backbreaking type of work on your property if they're not covered, right? And it means you're not covered, or you're covering it. You know, it's you. So. And I can imagine people subbing out some of the kind of work that you do to unlicensed people from time to time.
Yep, that's exactly. We face the exact same issue.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So let's. I want to make sure that we sort of think about the future for. So you're building this business. What does the future look like? And what do you see as the big obstacle that? You know, you mentioned, you know, you guys are goal oriented. You've got a vision for the future and a purpose. But what is, you know, if they're maybe describe what that looks like, maybe visually for us. And then is it a lot of employees? Is it a super, super big company or something different? And then what's the big obstacle for getting there?
Well, my purpose with the business is to ensure that Sierra Pacific is an enduring company. It should outlive me. So we're in 38 years, you know, right now. In 38 more years, long after I've handed off to the next leadership group, it should continue to endure. Our clients, I owe it to our clients that we've served and continue to serve. They have warranties with us. We're a trusted source for them. It's my responsibility to make sure that we continue to do that. We have people that are retiring from the company, have retired from the company. It's a huge point of pride for me and our team that we've seen people retire after, you know, 25, 27, 30, 33 years with Sierra Pacific. You know, we have retirements, and it's a beautiful thing that they've had a great career. They started off as a helper in one of the departments, usually in solar pool, mm-hmm. and they've grown into leadership positions, and they've had a rewarding, financially successful career. And so I love that. And that's my purpose. Make sure that Sierra Pacific has a fortress level balance sheet so that it can endure another 2008, 2009, another COVID, whatever the case may be. So that's my own purpose. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we're working to become an organization that just is great at developing people. We'll happen to be in the home services business, but really organizing around how do we become a development company. If we develop people and grow people, then we'll continue to grow. We can grow in this market quite a bit. So the greater Sacramento area is our focus. We're not looking at far off lands to try to go and set up satellite shops. We feel like we can be great right here and grow organically and do great business right here. And there's a long runway for us to do that here. So that's what we're focused on right now. Ultimately, the reason that we have synthesized around this concept of becoming a development company is because it comes down to people and the shortage of people that are interested in going in the trades, and then just the overall shortage of workers in general. But the shortage of tradespeople is a big one.
You know, it's interesting. It can be one of the biggest challenges or problems, but I think done right, if you make the right investment, it can become one of the best opportunities. It really is a way for us to set ourselves apart, for you to set yourself apart in these trying times when people are like, I just need a guy or a gal. I just need somebody. I need a body. Well, you know what? You're getting that kind of service. When you get something that's remarkable, uncommon, you know, that's gets the word of mouth advertising and all that kind of stuff that makes your company last a long time. So
totally agree. It's part of our mission statement. And so oftentimes to keep it really succinct with the team. So our mission statement is for our clients to be delighted. Delighted clients become loyal clients. So they're loyal with us because they're delighted with their experience with us. It's not that, oh, these guys installed the air conditioner. They like those guys. And that's what we work on, and we talk about that with the team. And so I'll see the install crews coming back and ask them how their day went. And all I got to ask them is mission accomplished. And they all know what that means. They know, like, did we just deliver a fantastic experience that earned a loyal client? And ultimately leading to a 5-star review, right? That's the idea. Like if you're delivering that kind of an experience, then mission accomplished.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. One of the things that I want to do is make sure that I bring great guests onto the show and that they've got compelling information and things that we can learn and interesting. And all I'll say to myself is mission accomplished. So thank you for helping me. Mission accomplished for you. I think you've definitely put your company in a good light, but you've put entrepreneurship in a good light, which is really what I'm all about.
I love it. I'm proud to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.